Hello, everybody, and welcome to tonight's film club. And boy, is it a good one tonight. This week we had, or this month, should I say, we had a clear winner. And that clear winner, well out in advance, was Watership Down, a childhood favourite of mine, but a film not without its controversies. So quite a lot to discuss here tonight. Now, we're live tonight on Odyssey, which is our preferred platform. It's a platform that allows us to stream, to upload videos, to take donations, to trade cryptocurrency, and it is a great one-size-fits-all solution to replacing YouTube. So it's like YouTube, but better because there's no censorship. Make sure you're sub to us there. Secondly, we're live on DLive, which is another good streaming platform. And finally, we are, as ever, live on RadioAlbion.com. And Radio Albion is the home of our good friend Sven Longshank. So make sure you bookmark that. Now, if you would like to contribute to the stream, you can send financial gifts or donations via Entropy, which is the free speech alternative to Super Chat. The link for the Entropy will be placed in the chat on both Odyssey and DLive. And you can send financial donations or gifts now through Odyssey directly. So you just have to click on the support button there. So if you want to support my work, if you want to help support us financially, those are the ways to do it. Now, obviously, if you ask a question, if you make a comment, or if you have anything to say about the film or about our review of the film, you can do, and you can do that by attaching your question or comment to the Super Chat, and we will read them out through the stream. Also, if you want to ask non-paid questions, you can do so through Entropy just by clicking on the question tab and adding your question there, and we will make sure it gets asked either to the panel as a whole or to the relevant member of the panel. Now, we have our usual panel here tonight, and as I've already said, we're reviewing Watership Down. That Watership Down is a charming animated tale about a group of bunny rabbits who go on a journey to find a new and safe home to ensure their people survive. And on that journey, they encounter numerous perils, numerous trials. Members of their group don't make it the full way. And despite all this, despite some quite gory scenes, despite some bloodshed, and despite some animated violence, this film caused quite a lot of controversy at the time because it got a U rating, which is the BBFC rating for universal, meaning suitable for all. So you could show this to a toddler. It's not a parental guidance, it's a universal. And we'll discuss that controversy later. But it's a film that many people who might be watching tonight, and I'm obviously not watching, I am here on the panel, but many people tonight will remember this quite fondly. I remember it fondly as a child, and I also remember being a little bit shocked by some of the scenes in it, which some would say might be a little bit, worrying or disturbing to children. But as always, let's go around the panel first, and let's ask everyone what they thought of the movie, how their weekend was, and what their initial impressions were. And we'll start with you, St. Harrison. How was your weekend? How are you doing? Did you enjoy the film? And what are your initial impressions?
Hello, everyone. Well, it's been a lovely weekend. As I said before the show started, I've just come back from all-you-can-eat Chinese. And last night, I know it's a different film, we watched The Man Who Would Be King, which I've never seen before, but I would highly recommend. I'm glad this film won because it was my choice. And it is quite dark, but it's, I think it kind of goes into what we were talking, or you were talking about in the book review last, in Dark Stories for Kids, the old fairy tales, that kids actually like this kind of thing. They like a bit of violence, they like dark, and films that aren't really Disneyfied, but I'm sure we'll get into it more.
Okay, thank you so much. Nativist Concern, how are you doing, my friend? I hope you had a good weekend. Tell us a bit about what you've been up to, and tell us if you enjoyed the film and what were your initial impressions.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. Not the most exciting weekend, but it's been relaxing. Playing a bit of darts last night, that was fun. Onto the film. First time I've ever seen it. Yeah, I guess the thing that becomes apparent quite quickly is it's not exactly the sort of kids film you would imagine. I think it draws on I would call it a blend of sort of Old Testament and Virgil, the Aeneid mythology. It's kind of a blend of those two stories, like a quest to find a new land for a people. And I suppose in that way it's, well, I actually researched the author. He identifies as a Christian, and he actually said that there was no sort of subtext or moral to the story. It was just a book about rabbits. And the way
the do you
way
know how the book was written?
Yeah, he was telling stories to his daughters on long car journeys, and eventually they nagged him into making it a reality. So I actually think that this is kind of subconsciously written from, you know, European mythology, and it's sort of blended into sort of a pro-democracy, anti-fascist sort of moral tale that also incorporates ecology, protection of the natural earth, and all that kind of thing. I mean, the start was very interesting to me. It seemed a lot like Genesis. So it starts out with the great Frith, who is essentially God, creates all the animals. The rabbits are reproducing themselves too quickly. The great Frith says, you need to rein yourselves in. And then the leader of the rabbit says, no, our people are the best. And then God gives all the other animals the sort of gifts to prey on the rabbits. So the rabbits have to develop cunning to survive. And this is very Old Testament stuff. Adam and Eve break God's commands. So then they're punished and they have to go through struggle. The binding of Isaac story in the Old Testament, where God tells Isaac to worship all before him. It definitely draws on sort of the ancient myths of Europe. And I think that was the main takeaway for me. And yeah, I think the music and the sort of the watercolor scenery in this sort of 70s vintage style it really comes together into a compelling story.
Excellent, and some good background there. I looked into the film, I looked into the book, and I was really impressed by the fact this was basically a tale that a dad told his two daughters on long car journeys to keep them entertained. And he wasn't very invested, actually. He wasn't bothered in writing it down or making anything of it. And his daughters were like, no, 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 this is brilliant. We loved this. We loved this. These were the stories that made our childhood. So they got him to write it down. And the book was actually rejected by dozens of publishers. Nobody wanted anything to do with the book initially, but actually one publisher eventually said, yes, we'll reluctantly give it a go. You know, it's okay. We'll give it a go. And the first edition sold out straight away. It was an instant smash hit. And, you know, as they say, the rest is history, because from there on, this became one of those quintessential children's books, which has inspired generation after generation. So, Laura, what was your initial take on the film? Did you enjoy it? And how was your weekend? I think anyone who's been following on Telegram knows that your weekend was pretty crap. But let's all have a laugh about it anyway.
Well, my weekend was good yesterday, but then today I stubbed my toe on a box and broke it. And my toe's like bent off in one direction. So I spent the whole morning sat in A&E. And now I have one of those weird shoes, you know, with no front to it, so your toes can hang out. So yeah, I'm in lots of pain. But apart from that, it was good. The film, I used to watch this all the time when I was a kid. And I remember it being really, really scary. And I haven't watched it in, I'm 34 now, so it must have been maybe 25 years or something. I haven't seen it since. And I watched it today, and I still think it's really, really good. I think the animations are beautiful. It's very English. And I love how some of the things that you see on screen are just still pictures. and then the rabbits just move through them. I think it looks really good. I think the voice acting is really good. I just think it's a really beautiful film. The music, and I said it's scary. It still is scary. You know, when like the red blood comes over the hills and the music comes on, like, drrr, it's so much scarier than any horror film that's out today, because you do fear for the rabbits. And I think in terms of themes, it will be interesting to poke Nativist a little bit more and ask him what he means by anti-fascist. But I see lots of nationalist themes in there, you know, wanting to continue your people by having offspring, maybe a bit of heroism and leadership sort of themes, community, culture. Like you guys have said, that the guy said that there wasn't supposed to be a religious element in there, but, you know, there clearly is with the sun, whether that was accidental or not. And I think the black rabbit is supposed to be like a grim reaper sort of character, and that's spiritual as well. But yeah, I really like it, and it's a film that I'm going to show Catherine as well as she's growing up. Hopefully she won't be too scared. I watched it when I was a kid. But yeah, I really like it. It's going to get a good score from me, and I'll pass it back to Mark.
Well, I make no secret, I love this film. This film is fantastic. I think it's a really, really good film, really strong film. I watched it as a child. I remember it being a film that, as a child, the bit that really scared me was the bit where Bigwig, the sort of tough rabbit of the good guys, he gets caught in a snare and he's dying a painful death, and they have to free him, and he's like frothing blood at the mouth. And I do remember it being quite scary and quite intense, but I remember being gripped by it, because at the time, the only real, and this is a bit of a quintessentially British thing here, the only real animated films that you would see would be animated films that were Disney, and they followed the Disney path, the Disney pattern, the Disney template, if you like. They were musicals, they had lots of singing in them, they were quite upbeat, there might have been bad guys and good guys, but these films were very, very generally happy films, upbeat films, films that you would sit and watch with your family. And the odd one might have had dark moments or dark undertones, or the original source material or the fairy story they may have been based on might have had dark undertones. But the darkness wasn't really in your face as it is with this film. And this film pulls no punches, but it is beautifully animated. It has an amazing voice cast. It has a beautiful soundtrack. And yes, there is that controversy we're going to come back to about the violence. But I think despite this being a story that a man just came up with on the fly to amuse his daughter on long car journeys, it is quintessentially European. This story of making this epic journey, of staying together as a group, as looking after your friends, as of facing death, facing these obstacles, but overcoming them. And all of this is being done for the continuation and safety of your people. I think whether this guy knew it or not, whether it's subconscious or whether he, and I don't know the answer to this. I should imagine this guy, the guy who wrote it, he may be dead now. So I don't know. I can't say exactly. And even if you asked him in today's environment, you probably wouldn't get an expressly truthful answer, because if he came out and said, yes, I was influenced by, you know, European mythology and the European right to survive or drive to survive, he probably wouldn't even be able to say that in today's environment, which is very sad, obviously. But I do believe that this does have those overtones. And I like the way that the film is a very complete piece. It starts with a creation tale of how the rabbits came about, how the rabbits have so many predators. And it ends years and years after the main story concluded, giving proper closure to many parts of the tale and the stories of the rabbits that you become so attached to. And when I say become attached to, it sounds odd, because ultimately you watch films that are acted by real human beings. You watch films where you are watching human beings on the screen. And I've got to say this. in many cases, I don't think you end up as attached to those human beings as I ended up attached to those rabbits in this film. I think this film's got this incredible way of attaching you to the source material and to the characters. And I was looking into the way they actually animated this film, and they animated it obviously to look like rabbits, but to slightly and subtly anthropomorphize the rabbits, so that although they looked clearly like rabbits and they weren't cartoonish, they did or were given certain features that were more human. And they were given those certain features so that you would understand their emotions during the film. And again, I think that is that's really key to this film being so powerful, that you do actually understand the emotions and the feelings these rabbits are, you know, feeling. It helps suck you in to the production. So overall, yeah, I really like it. So let's now we've talked a little bit about our first impressions. Shall we first talk about the artwork? Because I think the artwork is beautiful, and I think it's very different to other animated films. Again, it is quintessentially British. I think it's quintessentially British. It's certainly not Disney, and it's certainly not in line with, say, Japanese animation, because the runner-up to this was Akira, the incredible Japanese animated movie, a movie whose animation was actually so good it changed the way that people animated. You know, it changed the whole landscape of animated films. But I think this film just has something about it. The artwork, the way it looks. Laura summed it up perfectly. It's like a beautiful painting that comes to life. Did you like that, St. Harrison? Or does anyone think the opposite? Please, everyone, just give your opinions on the what I think is marvellous artwork.
It's definitely quintessentially British animation from those times, because I don't know if you've ever seen a film called When the Wind Blows. It's also very similar to that. And also the snowman, you can tell it's not American, and has been mentioned you have the watercolor backgrounds to make it look like Sandalford, which is a real place, which was actually turned into a house and estate in 2019. So the rabbits were right. But no, we've always been like much better at animation than our American counterparts. Although they have Disney, we have kind of made it look more original, whereas all theirs are quite samey. I mean, I'm not, but no, it's a very, very good looking film, even now, like 45 years on. And I was actually reading about it. He did at one point, Richard Adams, who wrote it, said he based it when he was in the army on the Battle of Arnhem in 1944. And he said that some of the rabbits were based on people that he served with. So I don't know how much truth there is to that, where he was just answering, actually he was sick of people answering or asking where the ideas came from. But no, it's a beautiful looking film. And after I watched it again for the first time in 20 years, the 2018 remake or version of it came on from the BBC, and all it was computer generated, and it looked dreadful in comparison. And even the voice acting in the remake, it just sounded so flat. No one cared.
They haven't remade it, have they? Have they remade it?
They remade it in 2018 for Netflix and the BBC.
Oh, God, like, they just need to stop doing that to stuff. They just ruin everything.
I love Laura's naivety here when she says, have they remade it? And you're like, Laura, they will destroy everything.
Yeah. We can't have anything. They just have to. I think they're running out of ideas, aren't they? So they're just remaking old stuff and making them crap.
They
can't diversify it.
The worst remake ever or continuation ever was the remake/continuation of He-Man. Now, I don't want to digress too much, but if you really hate remakes and you really hate them sort of crapping all over your childhood, the quintessentially or the sort of pinnacle of terrible remakes and crapping on your childhood is what they did to He-Man.
They did that to Thundercats as well last year.
Did they turn Lion-O into like a dribbling, crying soy boy?
Yes.
And promote his like love interest as a now a lesbian heroine who slaps him about and steals the day?
They're the gender neutral bollocks. Don't watch it.
Oh, God, no, no. Well, anyway, back to this. Carry on with the nativist and Laura. Give your takes, please, on the animation.
Yeah, I mean, just beautiful watercolours. And it's a great way to display English meadows. It is quintessentially English and, original and beautiful. And that was a great enjoyment of watching the film.
Anything to add, Laura?
Yes. I just think it's beautiful as well. It's very delicate and not too cartoony. And it reminds me of Animals of Farthing Wood as well, which is something that I used to always watch when I was a kid. I think that was German to begin with. It was something. And then we made it as a cartoon in Britain. It reminds me of that. And it also reminds me of that in the way that animals die and you just expect it to deal with it. So many animals die in Animals of Farthing Wood. But yeah, I think the scariest bit in Watership Down was the bit when they're talking about the humans destroying their old warren, and they're talking about how they buried them all, you know, by filling in the rabbit holes. And it shows like all the rabbits trying to escape and just piling up on each other, and the music comes on. And it's not even, it doesn't actually show them as real rabbits. It kind of like just shows them as floating heads. I don't know why they chose to do that, but it worked. And they do that a few times throughout the film. And it's just really, it must have been really easy to draw them, but it just really works. And it just really scares you and upsets you. So, yeah, I think it was beautiful. And, you know, like we said, it's a nice sort of, you know, pencil drawing or watercolour drawing throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, I've got to agree with Laura here. I don't want this to be just like one big agreement party. But the horror in the film and the bits that are meant to scare you, or the bits that are meant to make you feel the sort of terror that the rabbits would be feeling, I have to say, they were drawn in such a way that it made you feel that fear. You felt the pain and fear the rabbits were going through. And that's a really interesting thing, because it's all obviously presented as a drawing. And sometimes the drawings are what I would call abstracts. They're not actual, you know, anatomically correct drawings of rabbits. There's a horrible moment at the beginning where Fiver, a rabbit who is a seer, he can predict the future. He has these visions and he knows what's coming. He sees in advance that that Sandalwood is going to be destroyed, and he knows that this is the end for them as rabbits. He knows it's the end for them there, as basically, you know, as their happy warren. And it shows this footage of the area being destroyed, but it shows the field bleeding and these big scars coming down it, and the music, and it does really inspire terror. Really, really does. And it's excellent, because when you think about it, you're watching what is ostensibly a children's film, but it's making you feel fear through, you know, animation. And it's hard to explain, but it sounds a bit, I'm probably not explaining it correctly, but it does a great job of making you feel what the director and producers want you to feel, and doing it in a medium that you wouldn't necessarily believe could make you feel that kind of fear. So I hope that's come over correctly.
It's the kind of film that someone who is deaf could watch and completely understand what is going on because of how it's made. And as you said before, the facial reactions of the rabbits. So you could watch it completely on mute and still fully understand the story. And that is a good piece of filmmaking.
Yeah, I agree there fundamentally. That is an amazing point. I completely agree. I think if you were to watch this, you know, on silent, you would pick up pretty much what's happening, like you've just said. And I think that's really that's really incredible, because we've all said how much the voice acting and the music sort of really adds to it. But at the same time, it is drawn so well that it could really tell you everything you need to know without the voice acting or the music. So, yeah, incredible. So before we go on to the big controversies of this picture, what do you think the themes were? We'll start with you, St. Harrison.
I mean, when I watched it as a kid, all I saw was, like, it's just rabbits trying to survive. You don't think too much into it. But then I kind of watched it now and I think Fiverr is essentially us, in that we go to the people in charge, go, look, this is what's going to happen. And then they turn around and go, don't talk crap. It's not going to happen. Go away. But then it happens and they still don't know or don't care. So I think it could be taken that way. And the rabbits are essentially us. We just want to be safe. We don't want to have to move away to be safe because it's our area. But eventually people do take that flight somewhere else just to stay safe for a little bit longer until the danger comes to them as well or comes again. So in this constant state of moving around just to be safe. And the fact that they've got the arrest for dissension and rocking the boat as well, it's definitely our themes there. So it's like General, was it Woodwart? Is meant to be the fascist, as some people see it in the film.
He looks like Nick Griffin, doesn't he?
He does.
Oh my God, he does.
And I saw another take on it where, unsurprisingly, people were saying that the rabbits represented Jews being persecuted. Every single time.
No, you see, no, I, you know what? I can see people saying that. But what you've said there, I hadn't even thought of this. Now, somebody once described nationalism or nationalists as being like Cassandra from the Greek mythology, where we constantly try to warn people, but in trying to warn people, we are willfully ignored at every turn. So we're always like, hey, this is going to happen. The bad times are coming. You know, we've got to make a future for our people. If we don't do something now, we're not always going to have our land. We're not, you know, something bad's coming. Something bad's going to happen. Please listen. Just listen. You know, we just need you but people don't listen. People do the opposite. They laugh at us. They deride us. And our leaders are, now this guy is obviously not sort of red pilled. He's not red pilled in the sense the guy's written. It's not red pilled in the sense that, oh, I don't believe he's red pilled in the sense he knows that our leaders are actually against us. But you see, from a normie point of view, this would be what normies think. Because I do speak to normal people, and normal people say things like, why aren't they listening? But we can all see the problems coming. But why aren't they in Westminster going to do anything about it? Why don't they just listen? And obviously, we're at that other level where we know that the people not listening are, you know, they're not just daft old fools who are committed to the old ways. They are actually in on this plot to destroy us. They're in on this plot to ruin us. And because of that, they're never going to listen, because it's against their interests to listen. And I think that's a fundamental thing here. What we're trying to say is, or what I'm trying to say, is this is kind of a normie's take on nationalism. The people in charge don't listen. The normal people are sick of it. The normal people want change. But the fuddy-duddy old leaders, when it's pointed out to them that there's going to be bad times are coming, they're just like, don't be so ridiculous. That won't happen. Come on, go to bed, everyone. Wake up. It'll be another day and life will go on. And then they wake up the next day and the warren's being filled in. So I do think this has some of that. I think this has sort of a normie's view of nationalism in there, that these people are essentially trying to preserve their people, and every warning, every every worry they have, that they take to these out of touch leaders. The out of touch leaders just want to ignore it and just want life to keep plodding on as it always did. But sometimes change is inevitable and you have to adapt. And I'd say that fits into our, that does fit into our narrative, especially from a more normie perspective.
Shall I continue on my takes on the themes?
Definitely, mate, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, as I said at the start, the opening scene is very much like Genesis. And it also incorporates the binding of Isaac story, in my view, that the great fearful God demands that, you know, you put faith before your people, faith in him before your people. So at the start, you could sort of see the rabbits as the Jews led by Moses or whatever, I suppose you could say. And one theme I'd like to pick up from the start is you hear the farmers speaking faintly. One of them says, oh, you can't stop progress or something like this. And this is sort of the, you know, the modernist mentality of just constantly building on the land and economic growth at the expense of the ecology. So that's something I picked up on. It's a very, again, a very British mentality. I mean, a lot of people say the notion of progress, it's comes from Christianity and Darwinism, this feeling of moving towards, a final outcome. But then there's also this, you could also compare the story to the Aeneid in quite a lot of ways. So for those that aren't that familiar.
Can you just give me 1 second, mate? Just because I don't know the Binding of Isaac story. So would that be helpful? Because obviously you're going through a few different things here. And I actually genuinely am not aware of that. So could you give me the lowdown on that too?
Yeah, so this is in the Old Testament where Isaac has his baby son, and God tells Isaac to kill his son, and Isaac's about to do it, but then God says, "Don't do it. I just wanted to check that you had faith in me." That's the binding of Isaac story, and the moral is that you should do whatever God says, like put God before blood. So that's like the sort of the one of the key themes of the Old Testament. Same thing, Jacob and Esau. Esau is the athlete, and Jacob betrays it. So Isaac has two sons, Jacob and Esau, and Jacob colludes with Rebekah, Isaac's wife, to steal his elder brother's birthright. And Esau is like the athlete. I think he's also said to be a race mixer as well. And he gets condemned to Edom, which is either like Europe or the Middle East, like the Arabs in the Jewish mythology. So the Jew, and also when at the end of the story, when you've got a bigwig taking on a wound wart, he sort of sets a trap. And that is very much like David and Goliath as well. Wound wart would win a fair one-on-one like Goliath, but the rabbits are more cunning. So you've got this Old Testament theme definitely running through the story for me. But there's also the Aeneid theme as well, which is Roman mythology written by Virgil. And that basically goes at the fall of Troy. Aeneas is one of the last Trojan survivors, and he has to take the sword of Troy or the flame of Troy onwards to find a new land. And he ends up being one of the sort of the founders of Rome, the new civilization. Juno or Hera hates Aeneas because she favored, this is getting a bit overcomplicated, but she sets challenges for him because she favored Carthage and she foresaw the Romans sacking Carthage. Also in Watership Down, you've got they're very conscious of like needing to reproduce themselves. And, the does in the other warren are saying, oh, we don't have space. We need more Lebensraum, if you like, to have babies. And then they try and take the does from the other warren. And that's that's kind of similar to the Sabine women and the founding of Rome. So I think what the author's done is he's blended these two ancient stories from European mythology into one little thing that he's sort of written subconsciously. And I think it's much in the same way as J.K. Rowling writing at Harry Potter. It's very sort of Christian, anti-fascist. And I think she did that all subconsciously, down to the goblin bankers. And, you know, she gets accused of being illiberal and all this kind of thing now. And I just think it's very deep inside our minds, these morals from childhood.
Well, I'm telling you this now. She didn't put the goblin bankers in because the goblin bankers didn't in there because she was making an anti-Semitic point, I don't believe.
But I mean, you know, when you look at the main other Warren, the one run by Woundwort, the Efrafa Warren. I mean, the whole thing is sort of a military dictatorship. The rabbits are all this dark brown, and they're all fierce, and it's like a police state. They're attacking each other, keeping everyone in line. And the good guy rabbits led by Hazel and Bigwig and all that. They have different shades of colors. They're very democratic. And you know, it's like this utopian vision that, you know, you just discuss things and everything gets done, and we're just led by the intuition of Fiver. He's like, you know, the young seer, the runt of the litter, who's like the priest class. And yeah, the only other thing I picked up on was, I think it's called the Countryside Warren, and there's something a bit eerie about it, and where Bigwig gets snared. And it turns out that the farmer is actually feeding the rabbits deliberately so he can snare some of them. And then the leader of that warren, I think he's called Cowslip or something, he sort of comes up with his own religious doctrine where he just resigns himself to fate. He lives the good life, but the rabbits will just die to the snare when fate decides. So he develops his own sort of religious system in that situation as well. So yeah, they're the big themes for me. I like to do all this stuff. I end up talking about Christianity in half of these.
Yeah. Can I ask you something as well? Like, cause I think you've raised a really interesting point, because they do come across on their journey to find their perfect place and their freedom. They do actually come across several places that they could stay. Now, one of those places is Cowslip's Warren, which is one where men give them all their food. Men give them all these vegetables, feed them up, then snare them and eat them. And the warrens are there largely empty. And they say, oh, it's very eerie here. It's very eerie. There's no actual, you know, isn't it strange that there's so... there's so few rabbits here. Isn't it strange that it's all so empty? And they're kind of spooked by this, aren't they? They're spooked. They're not very, they don't feel at ease in that place. And I think that is almost a nationalist idea too, that you cannot rely on benefits. You cannot rely on other people helping you out. You can't rely on the man giving you fresh vegetables every day, because ultimately, if he's giving you the fresh vegetables every day, he probably wants something in return. He's probably going to ask for something back. And I thought that was very interesting, because obviously, you know, as nationalists, we believe that you should stand on your own two feet, that we should have self-determination. Then they reach this other warren, which is Efrafar. And Efrafar is a warren that, although is safe, and although it's safe from humans and predators, people who are or the rabbits living there lose all their freedoms for that safety. They give up all the freedoms for that safety. And I think that it's a very sort of quintessentially British tale, because what they're saying is you don't need somebody to provide for you. You should provide for yourself. And you shouldn't be in a position where somebody else is ruling over you and protecting you, but you give all your freedoms away for that protection. I think what it's saying is freedom comes from being genuinely free and standing on your own two feet. And I do think that is a quintessentially British view of freedom as an idea. I don't know if you think I'm totally missing the point there, but I do think that that is something that the author might not have thought of when he was writing it, in the sense of consciously thought of it. But I do think that it's something that most likely seeped into that, because, as I say, this guy, you know, obviously does have links to the military. He fought in wars. He would have obviously thought he was fighting for his nation's freedom. And, you know, from all that, he's come away and written this book and sort of turned into a film. And some of those themes have bled into it. I don't know if you think I'm totally off the mark there, Nativist.
No, I mean, it's very British mentality he has. He fought in World War II, and it's absolutely what I'd expect from someone of his time. You know, a true Anglo mentality in this story. And, you know, I suppose the countryside, Warren, is sort of like the modern parallel would be Ukraine today, you know, taking a few billion here and there from, you know, the United States and the EU or whatever, but you got to pay with your blood. So yeah.
So Laura, what did you think the themes were? What really stuck out in your mind as a theme from this film?
Well, I think there are lots of themes that we discuss daily in nationalism, really. Themes like community and wanting to, I guess the rabbits just wanted to secure an existence for their rabbits and a future for baby rabbits. So like fertility and stuff like that. Leadership, heroism, I would say as well, environmentalism is obviously a big one. Maybe anti-modernity, and maybe I think the farmer's Warren might have actually represented modernity, because there's this illusion of happiness there, but actually there's no freedom whatsoever, and there's a very good chance that those in charge are going to just take you out. I don't see General Wound, what is it, as being fascist. I see him as being authoritarian, and like Nativist said, the sort of a bit of an element of maybe having like a police state, or it's very sort of military focused there. I definitely see them as the bad guys in the film. Yeah, that's it. I think you've said everything else I have highlighted as a theme on my notes.
So Laura, if you had to live in one Warren, where would you be happiest to toe the line?
Well, obviously we'd pay our own just like we're doing at Patriotic Alternative.
I was trying to make as many puns about toes as I could throughout the show, because obviously you broke your toe.
Oh, I didn't even pick up on that.
Wait,
all the paracetamols and ibuprofen have gone to me.
Laura's basically off her head on prescription drugs tonight, guys. Anything goes. Well,
it was so funny as well at the hospital, because the nurse, it was a black guy, and he was looking at Sam, and he was going, "I recognise you from somewhere. Where have I seen you?" And me and Sam were just like, "Don't know." Do you watch Dispatches?
Oh God, that would have been like the worst thing ever.
He didn't call him James, did he? James Baker.
James Baker. No, he didn't. Sam was like, I think when guys have got bald heads and beards, we all just look the same. You've probably just seen someone that looks like me.
Oh my God. Well, that is, not the best time to end up in hospital, when you're fresh in the minds of the public and when there aren't any white nurses around. I also find it really odd when you have like male nurses. I still to this day always, when you say a nurse, I always think of a woman for some reason. Anyway, so shall we get on to the big controversy of the film? And there's going to be a question following this controversy. And by the way, at the end of tonight's show, we are going to choose next month's film. But we're not actually going to choose it. I am now assuming position as complete and utter authoritarian dictator of the film club, and I have chosen next month's film for everybody.
This is because you don't want to do a foreign language film, and that's what the public want.
We're never doing a foreign language film. I would rather hand over film club. I'd rather cede film club to the enemy and burn down my own house than sit inside a warm, cozy house watching a foreign language film and producing a film club about a foreign language film. So yeah,
is it any wonder people think you're a racist?
Yeah, exactly. I am literally Britain's most monstrous human being. But yeah, so basically, the big controversy of this film, and we've got to get on to this because this is a huge thing. And I remember this film as a kid, and I remembered it being something that was quite upsetting to watch. And I remember at the time, parents being sort of, you know, like, don't let your kids watch this film. Don't let your kid. This is a brutal film. Now, I looked into this because I was very, very interested, actually, that it was seen in that way. And I was very, very interested that so many parents were so upset about the film. I found that really, really interesting. And obviously, this went through the BBFC. And there are two sort of popular schools of thought about this. And the first popular school of thought is that the BBFC were just like, yeah, we looked at the DVD, we looked at the cover, we looked at the movie poster. It's a rabbit. It's an animated film. Can we be asked watching it? Probably not. Let's all go and have a cup of tea and give it a you. And then there's another sort of more mature take on this. And that is that the film was fundamentally real life. This wasn't sort of that horrific fantasy violence or horror or gore or blood for sort of titillation. This wasn't kind of a zombie flesh eaters or something like The Evil Dead. This wasn't one of the quote unquote video nasties, those films that, you know, people obviously got their knickers in the twist over at a certain point in time. This was actually a film that portrayed violence as it would have been portrayed. You know, nature is brutal. You know, rabbits do kill each other. Rabbits do get eaten. All of these things would actually at the time have been sort of things that were very accepted by countryside folk. These are things that, you know, people who lived out in the countryside would deal with on a daily basis. And the censors, you know, may well have viewed the film as something that was actually healthy for children. It imparted the reality on children that, you know, countryside life and, you know, the lives of these animals wasn't just a fluffy Disney fairy tale. This wasn't a case of Snow White skipping through the forest and all her animal friends coming down and cooperating and helping her doing the washing. This was actually the brutal reality of what actually happens on a day-to-day basis. Nature is life, nature is death, and the two are very much intertwined. But nevertheless, saying all that, there were some gory scenes. And I remember as a child being very, very disturbed when, you know, Bigwig was throttled. I remember General Woundwort being scary. And I remember that fight at the end between Bigwig and Woundwort and literally being on the edge of my seat and sort of really hoping that, you know, this big, scary rabbit doesn't eat all the other rabbits, doesn't tear them all to shreds. So, and now you get a lot of people saying, oh, this for me was a traumatic event. You know, I watched this as a child and I was traumatized. You get a lot of people saying, you know, they wouldn't show it to their children. You get people saying, oh, no, it should be reevaluated. It should be cut. And I believe that there is now a cut version in circulation, that there is actually a version of this wonderful film that has been sort of butchered or toned down to appease these people who wanted censorship. Now, I find all that really, really fascinating, because in a world where it seems that violence, gore and horror seems to almost be there on tap, there are so many people that have a problem with the small amount of blood and the visual sort of the visual sort of gore in this film. So what do you guys think? We'll start with you, St. Harrison.
I mean, I can understand why it's a U. Because if you think back to the end of the 70s, there were less categories than there are now. I mean, their justification for it was because it might make the children, in their words, as I quote, emotionally during the film's duration, it could not seriously trouble them once the spell of the story is broken and a U certificate is therefore quite appropriate. End quote. I think it's the shock came from like people being used to Disney films and seeing everything all happy and not scary and not bloody. So they'll go and watch this animated film thinking it's going to be the same, only to be met by dogs tearing rabbits apart, rabbits tearing rabbits apart, and like you said, the snares. So yeah, it would have upset kids, but it's real life. So, and yeah, it's gratuitous, but it's still animated. So that kind of lessens the impact visually. So yeah, we'll scare kids, but I don't see it, any problem with it being a U. And I know they've complained about it every time they've recertified it as U up to now. I don't think they've ever got any intentions of changing it, mainly because of the age of the film, but also because it's good for kids to watch, because they'll have their little bunny out in the hutch outside. One day it's going to be dead. They need to know this. Won't necessarily be because of a snare or something else, but kids need to learn that the animal's not going to be there forever.
What age is Attenborough documentaries? Does anyone know?
What, sorry?
Like Attenborough nature documentaries.
They're not even rated. They're exempt because they're documentaries, unless they've got something quite gratuitous. When it comes to animals, you can pretty much get away with anything, unless it's Cannibal Holocaust, but that's another story.
Yeah, that was one of the video nasties. Maybe we should do a special episode on the video nasties, because that is something that was quintessentially British, the reaction to those films.
That film is disgusting.
Yeah, that film is not a film you want to eat. You want to watch while eating a meat feast pizza, I'll tell you that.
What film are you on about?
Cannibal Holocaust, where they actually kill real animals. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the monkey.
Oh, that's grim.
It is horrible. And if you actually read into the making of that film, which I have done, the people wanted to walk off. But it was incredible because this guy, the guy who made it, I think it's Dario. Is it Dario Argento?
No, he didn't make that one.
Ah, who?
I think it was. Is it Umberto?
I'm just actually looking. Because there's two really famous ones, isn't there? There's Dario Argento. No, it's Ruggero Deodato made that one. And you had the other one. There was two or three really famous Italian directors who made these really sickening horror films. But the reason this film became so notorious, I don't know if you know, and this is incredible. So Ruggero Deodato literally pushed everyone on set to the point of breaking. To the point where they were really couldn't go any further and looked like they were actually having mental breakdowns, because some of them were. They hated it. They hated him. They hated filming it. They hated what they were being put through. But at the end of the film, before the end of the film, he made the lead actors all sign disclaimers saying that they would go into hiding and not take work for so many months after the film was finished. And the practical effects were so gory, they were so horrific, so realistic, and so shocking that people actually believed it was a snuff film.
And they Ruggero had to go to court, didn't they, to prove that it wasn't?
Yeah, Ruggero Deodato was arrested. He was basically, I believe, charged with the murder of the actors and actresses in the film. And he had to get them to come out of hiding in order to and turn up in court to say, look, this was part of our contract. This was all part of the game, basically. But by that time, it had gone down in folklore. It'd gone down in folklore that these people were killed. And that actually made the film a much, much bigger hit than it ever was going to be, because people obviously went flocking to the cinema because they thought they were going to see people who were really being murdered by real life cannibals in the Congo. And they were mesmerized by it. So I know we're going a bit off piste here, but it was actually an incredible bit. Despite the fact it's sickening, it was a very, very well-made film, very convincing. It convinced the world. It got a man on trial for murder, basically. And it was all a giant work that made the film sort of a cult classic, which even today, you know, still sells, you know, relatively large numbers of copies for a film of that age, and has made the director, you know, a millionaire.
Good soundtrack as well.
Oh, yeah, it's beautifully composed. You can tell people on Film Club actually do like films because their knowledge goes beyond just the film we're watching. But who was next up for talking about the violence in this particular film, in Watership Down? Nativist.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to relate to young children. Like, what? I can't really remember anyone getting traumatised in my youth by anything they saw. I'd probably be comfortable giving this to my kids when they're about eight or so. I'm sure it would be nothing to kids that are raised in the country. They would see this stuff as normal. But maybe townies, they need a, you know, an animated introduction to life and death. So maybe about 8 years old, I'd say, is reasonable. One of my friends did say he's still traumatized by it because he saw it when he was about six. His mum just thought it was a, you know, a cute animation about rabbits. I think it goes far deeper than that. But yeah, my dad, he started me off very young on, you know, World War II documentaries and stuff. I was watching The World at War when I was about eight or nine, and that had horrific stuff in it. So, and I turned out all right. So I don't know. Yeah, I think you have to introduce kids to this stuff at some point, and maybe this is as good an introduction as any.
What do you think, Laura? As a mum, where do you lie on this particular film and its depiction of violence?
Well, I don't think you can wrap kids in cotton wool, but I wouldn't show it to a really young child. I wouldn't show it to a toddler. Maybe, was it Nativist who just said, like, 8 years old? I think he's quite a good age. But I used to watch stuff like this when I was a kid, like this and Animals of Farthing Wood, which I mentioned earlier. Never-ending story I used to watch all the time, where his horse dies in the quicksand, but it does come back at the end. I think I turned out all right as well. There might be people listening thinking you two did not turn out all right.
Yeah, I turned out great, didn't I? People are like, clip that out.
Yeah, I've said this on Film Club quite a few times, but if something can't happen in real life, it doesn't scare me. So I don't really get scared by horror films if it's like zombies or aliens, because I know it can't happen. But if something can happen, it does scare me and it does upset me. And I can't watch, like, Attenborough documentaries when the animal dies. What was Sam watching the other day? There was some little baby seal or something that got picked up by a bear. And I was like, turn it off. I can't watch it. I don't want to watch a little baby seal being killed. Yeah, anything to do with, like, animals or children or babies, if it could happen in real life, I don't really like it, because I don't know, it just upsets me. So I do think you need to, you can't wrap kids in cotton wool, but you do need to let them know what goes on in the world, because if you don't, then they'll grow up just being proper wusses and they won't be able to handle everything, and they'll be calling for everything to be banned. So I think you have to get the balance right, really.
Well, let's ask an interesting question then. Some people have kind of already answered this, but would you show this film to your child? And we'll go around the group and we'll start with me, because I'm the first one. I actually would. And if we were a family that watched sort of television, then yeah, I would definitely show this to Sophia. This would be something I'd be happy to show to Sophia. This would be something that I would, I think is appropriate. I think it's appropriate. And I also think that you can't, as Laura so rightly said, you cannot wrap your children in cotton wool. And I think wrapping them in cotton wool is a really, really bad thing. And I will say this, this film does have its difficult moments. And I can imagine that some people would not like their children watching this because of that. Some people would be like, no, we're not having the kids watching this. This is horrible. But I do believe it's the kind of violence, it's the kind of gore that isn't really violence and gore. It's just nature's way. So at the beginning of the film, there's a moment where they all escape the warren that's doomed, and they're making their initial escape. And as they're making their initial escape, they have one doe in the group, just one doe in the group called Violet. And Violet, a bird, I think a hawk, swoops down, grabs Violet in its talons and just swoops away. And that's it. That's it. She's gone. And the rabbits don't mourn Violet. They don't stop there. They don't say, look, you know, it'd be very Disney if the rabbits all said, look, we must go and rescue Violet. And then the rabbits gang together. They come up with some elaborate scheme. Violet's still alive in the hawk's nest, although a little bit injured. She can't get out, but she needs help. And they then go and free Violet. And there's a big happy ending with a bow on it. But this film does not deal with loss in that way. It doesn't deal with loss in that way. It deals with loss in a very, very different way. It deals with loss as basically that ultimately loss in nature is something that happens. You deal with it and you move on very, very quickly. Loss is something that when it occurs, you often don't have time to sit and mourn or stand and mourn the loss of a loved one or a creature. You just have to get on with it. And I found that to be a really, really important part of the film, because there are probably many films out there where if you actually were watching them, they would, as I said, they would dress all of this up. They would make it so, you know, you fundamentally felt as if there was going to be some redemption where everyone went on this big quest to save Violet. But they don't. They just move on. She's dead. She's gone. The rabbits understand that. And I think all of those things are important lessons for children, especially children with pets. And they deal with loss. They deal with heartbreak. They move on. It's a fast moving thing. And I do think that that's really important. I think all of those things are important. They're important for children to learn and learn at an early age. So I do think that the film, for the most part, does deserve its rating. And I say for the most part, and you're probably wondering, well, that's a bit of a caveat mark. What do you mean by for the most part? Well, there is actually a very interesting part of the film where at one point when they meet a seagull who goes on to be their ally, the seagull is grumpy. And during that scene, when they approach said grumpy seagull, the seagull does actually tell the rest of the group to piss off, but in a seagull's voice, he goes, piss off! And squawks at them in that manner. And that was something else that was pointed out to the censors, that essentially it does contain a squawked swear word. Now, I don't remember that as a child, and I might not remember it because obviously it was a long time ago when I initially saw the film, but I might not remember it simply because it's squawked in such a way that you don't actually, as an adult, you don't actually, always as a child, register it. And it did actually have to be pointed out to me when I was about that, and for me to actually go back and look at it. So I don't know whether you guys noticed that, but that was another thing. But for me as a parent, I think this film is definitely suitable for young children. I think it's important that young children are exposed to certain themes that are in Watership Down. I think it's quintessentially British, and I'd be happy for my daughter to watch it. But I'm interested to see what you guys would say, starting with you, St. Harrison.
Oh, I'd happily show it. Like when you were saying with Kiha telling the rabbits to piss off, I found that hilarious. I think I found that hilarious when I was younger as well. I mean, yeah, there's a couple of dams and for God's sake, but those words aren't, they don't carry the weight they do now because we've kind of gone backwards. But no, I think it is important to show kids this. One, for the themes, because you can explain it to them, especially from our point of view, but also so they can learn about death. So when their rabbit or their dog disappears, you're not pretending it's run off or it's gone away. No, it's in the garden. It's dead. It's buried. They have to learn. I mean, I showed my sister The Evil Dead when she was 5, and she's fine. I say fine. She's mentally deranged, but she's fine.
Damn it. I like you more and more per show. You know what? The new PWR co-host has just been announced. It's St. Harrison. That was... Right, so on to you, Nativist. What do you think? Would you show this to your children, or does it go too far?
Yeah, well, as I said, when they're about 8, I think is reasonable, maybe 7. But at the same time, I want to live on a farm and raise my children in the rural environment, so maybe they'll be learning about these things a lot younger. I'll have to see, but yeah, they have to learn at some point.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't show Catherine when she's 2, but when she's a little bit older, definitely. And I can't believe that you don't remember the seagull swearing. That is the most iconic part of the film. That's the only bit I remembered.
Really? That's the only bit of the film you remembered was Kahar swearing?
I might be exaggerating a little bit. No, I remembered, the bit that I remembered when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, nostalgia overdrive, was when, is it Bigwig got captured in that thing around his neck? Yeah. That was the bit I was like, yeah, that's the bit I remember from when I were a kid.
Yeah, I remember that. So we all agree then. We all agree that we watch it. I think I would let my child watch it. I'd let Sophia watch it from the age of 4 when she's old enough to sort of sit down and enjoy a full sort of a feature length piece, you know, not just sort of a 10 minute, you know, old bear story or a Postman Pat, but when she is at that age where she can watch a full length piece, I do believe that this would be something that would be appropriate, important, and I do believe she would really, really like this kind of thing. I think she might be upset at certain parts of it, but again, I think that's part of the importance of the film. So yeah, I do think it, yes.
I've had a few messages in the chat saying that people can't log into Entropy. I don't know if you want to reset it because we're not going to have any questions.
Oh, gosh. It says Entropy's working. For me, it says it's working.
Oh, I've seen 2 messages in the chat, one from Kerry and one from someone else saying that they can't log in.
That's really annoying because I've just refreshed it. We've got 1 Entropy. Yeah, we've only got 1 Super Chat. So that might be the reason we're running a little low on the old Super Chats tonight. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've checked it. It is working from my end, but I'm not sure, obviously, if it's working from everyone's end. So yeah, sorry if it's not, but I've just refreshed it and there's not really much I could do. Other than just say, could you, you know, obviously, please keep trying if you can. But I have just, we've only got 2 questions and 1 thing. So sorry if it's not working. You know, obviously, I wished it was because it's important that it does. But if it's not, I will reach out to the Empire developers and tell them that, you know, it wasn't working as hoped this evening. So, obviously, we've gone through some of the themes of the piece. We've gone through the controversy. We've gone through the music, the animation. Is there anything else that people would like to bring up about this film? Because one thing I will say about this, and this is something that in this case, I really like. I do like certain films. I've said I like certain films that have an open end. Like, I do like the ending of Laura's most hated film, The Thing, where at the end of the film, you do end up in this situation where you don't know the fate of the protagonist. And that's something I think is good in that case. But one thing I really liked about this was it is essentially a children's film. It is essentially a kid's film, although with some sort of adult tones. But, and I think this is really important, the film is very much a complete piece. You don't feel at the end of it that you need more. I didn't walk away from this film thinking, gosh, I really wish I knew what happened next. It takes you through everything from how rabbits were created right through to essentially, the end of the protagonists, the end of the protagonist. The final scene is the end of Hazel, the main protagonist, the end of Hazel. That is it. You get to the end of Hazel's life. And at the end of Hazel's life, you realize, that they have achieved their goals, because the prince of the rabbits comes down and says, I know you're getting tired. Would you like to join my Owsler? Owslers are like the police forces of the rabbit world. And at first, Hazel seems a little bit sort of reticent to say yes straight away, because Hazel's actually in a position where ultimately he doesn't want to leave his friends behind if there's not a certain future for them. He doesn't want to sort of just let them go if the future isn't completely set in stone. And the Prince of the Rabbits, I can't pronounce his name. If anyone can pronounce his name, maybe come in now and give me the correct pronunciation. Something like El Hara or something like that. But the Prince of the Rabbits assures Hazel, no. What you're seeing now will go on for thousands of generations and beyond. So he says, look, you found your perpetual safety. You found a future. And he passes away, and that's sad. And then you see his spirit rise from his old body and go running like a young rabbit again through the forest as a spirit with the Prince of the Rabbits. And I think it's a beautiful, like, sort of, but tear-jerking ending, to be honest. It's very sad and poignant. But I love the way the whole story is a complete story. I love it that it takes you from beginning to end, from the creation of the world of the rabbits, right through to this sort of totality at the end, where you see the end of these little rabbits that you followed from the beginning. And I they even give a suitable ending for the general for Woundwort. And I even think that's really nice, because Woundwort is obviously one of the primary protagonists, if not the primary protagonist of the whole film. And at the end they say, although we never know what happened to Woundwort, it's likely that he died fighting the dog at the end. But they said, Woundwort lived on in legend in Watership Down, that does would tell their kittens, if you stay out too late at night, General Woundwort would get you. And the narrator concludes that would be an honour that would most likely have pleased the general. So everyone that sort of played a meaningful part in that tale, you kind of get a conclusion for. And this is all in a kid's film with a running time of about an hour and a half. And I got to throw this out as well. You get these monstrous Hollywood films like Transformers Part 4 that's sort of 3.5 hours long. And there's not that much of a story. There's not a satisfying conclusion. The world building's not as good. This film is truly remarkable in everything that it manages to pack in. But the real sort of point of my question is to you guys, do you like that? Do you like the fact that fundamentally the author or the makers of the film, should I say, were so made such a concerted effort to build this world as they did and make it so very how can I say it? So complete. What do you guys think?
I think that's probably what helps it being a kids' film, especially for young kids, because it is kind of tied up at the end. So, like you said, although you don't know what happened to him, you know, he lives on in infamy because of his fight with the dog. And when Elaharia gets Hazel to finally give in after convincing him that, you know, it's safe to go now, you can move on because Watership Down's going to be safe. And it's comforting because you know that because of Hazel, the rabbit, then you, Warren, everyone's going to be fine. So it's a kind of nice, ties things up nicely. There isn't any need for a sequel. There isn't any need to drag it on. And like you said, there's no padding in it. It just moves from one like set piece to another. There's no meandering. It's not like 9 hours Lord of the Rings just walking about, which is always good. But no, and it's something you can discuss with the kids after. Like, what do you think happened to Boondwort? Oh, do you like him now? Are you happy? And no, it's just a nice, neat little film for an hour and a half.
Yeah, I would agree. There are a lot of moral lessons wrapped up in a neat little package. Good for kids to learn from. It's obviously based very much in Judeo-Christian and also European Roman mythology. I really like the end, actually. You know, that they reach their promised land and Hazel's done his duty and he can die peacefully having done that. The sort of afterlife theme is comforting for the kids as well. And, you know, that's what European people need to think more about, doing their duty and securing existence for their people. And, that's my biggest fear, dying a coward, having not done my duty.
I agree. It's nice, isn't it, where Hazel can...
Oh, Laura, your mic's gone horrible.
Oh, has it?
Yeah, it's really bad.
Did you have a toe?
Can you hear me?
You know, it's really crackly. It's like you have kicked it or something and you've unplugged it in some way. Have you pulled a mic or have you pulled a cord or something? Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah. You're back.
This microphone's knackered. I'm using my inbuilt one now then, so sorry it doesn't sound as nice. I was just saying...
I'll send you a new one. I've got a spare one. I'll send you one.
You have a spare microphone?
Yeah, I bought a Yeti like in a sale a few months ago and I don't really need it, so I'll send it to you.
I'll buy it off you if you don't need it. Thank you. I've had this one since I was at Defend Europa, so I think it's on its way out. I was just saying I agree with you all, and it's nice to see Hazel looking, you know, over by the tree and seeing all the rabbits and the baby rabbits playing and job done. Everyone's safe. His people or his rabbit family have got a home and they're going to live and continue to live for a long time. So I think it's nice. I don't think a film always needs to have the answers at the end. I think an open-ending film it works well sometimes. But I think for this film, the total sort of 360 works really well. So, yeah, I like the ending.
Well, I'm pleased everyone really enjoyed this film. You know, I do really like it, but let's do some of the super chats. And if people can't get the super chats through, I'm not really sure what to do. Cat Hugger gave $10. Thank you so much. And said, challenge. Everybody has a prize. Will Mark accept a foreign film if he gets requests asking for it reaching 100 euros? My request is also my favorite movie of all time. Love Exposure. yes, if people pledge 100 euros, I'll sit through a foreign language film. That's my price. P. Sutcliffe gave 3 euros. Thank you so much. He said, Mark, what is your take on Ukraine winning the Eurovision? Well, that's not really a film-related question, but we'll answer it. Thanks for pledging the 3 euros, even though for most people entropy isn't working. I just think it's pandering. Do you know what? I'm going to give you a hot take. Is that Laura? Can I give a hot take?
Yeah. You don't usually allowed, ask for permission.
I think I've got to ask for this. Do you know what? I had a great childhood. I really, really enjoyed spending time with my mum, with my family, and I've got really a lot of happy memories. And Watership Down is one of those happy memories. Playing with my Transformers is one of those happy memories. Playing with my Lego, a happy memory. Exploring the fields behind my house, a happy memory. Eurovision, not a happy memory. It was always crap. Absolute crap. We always did rubbish. Britain always did rubbish. The band or the singer or the group that was meant to be doing the song were always hyped up, and they were usually rubbish. I think the only one I remember was somebody called Gina G. That was the only one I remember. I think she had a sort of a middling pop career after that.
You just liked the video.
Oh, I can't. Saturday night.
I was thinking that Saturday night.
That's Wakefield, isn't it?
No, that's Wigfield. That's not Gina G.
What did Gina G do?
Who are just a little bit.
Yeah. And do you know what? Throughout all my childhood and all the wonderful, enjoyable things, I know a lot of kids like Eurovision. I know a lot of families gathered round the tea. Oh, it's Eurovision night. I hated it. I lamented the fact it was on TV. I hated it when a member of the family put it on. I thought it was a waste of time. I would always sit there grumbling that it wasn't like Bond season night or Schwarzenegger season night, or they weren't doing one of the endless replays of Indiana Jones or Star Wars. Eurovision was crap. I could not stand Eurovision. It was rubbish. And you know what? It's still rubbish. And you always got the countries that liked each other voting for each other, the countries that didn't like each other not voting for each other. And as it's progressed, it's not only been crap, but it's been a vector for pushing complete degeneracy. So not only is it just talentless rubbish that fills up the TV for a night so you don't get a good movie or something you'd actually want to watch, you now get something that's crap and you don't actually want to watch, rubbish music, and one of these progressive, degenerate, anti-white political messages, like a man dressed as a woman with a full beard singing some Euro trash pop. It's awful. It's awful. And now, lo and behold, the Ukraine have won Eurovision because everyone gave them 10 points because they're the Ukraine and evil Putin's just invaded them. And it can't be that bad an invasion, can it? Because they're competing in Eurovision. You know, if America had invaded them, the country would be flattened by now. Everyone would be dead and there wouldn't be anyone left to sing in some stupid pop contest. But now we have to suffer, you know, hearing about how Ukraine have won this and everyone loves them. It's crap. I've never liked it. I'm never going to like it. It gets worse all the time. And it's one of those things. I also wonder how it's survived. Like how it's, because some things, they go on for so long and then they kind of, and everyone knows they're crap and they sort of die and they're sort of quietly shuffled off, you know, so, oh, well, it's the last ever one of these and everyone watches it because it's the last ever one of them. But when they say, but record numbers watched, shall we bring it back? I was like, no. We watched to say goodbye, not because we wanted more. But this is one of those things that for some reason it survives, it endures. And I don't
Women
know
absolutely love it. Women absolutely love it. And it is a demonstration.
I've never met anyone who likes it. I've never met anybody who likes this crap. But here, nativists, go ahead. Tell me how I'm wrong.
Well, I'm in Eastern Europe at the moment and I'm sort of talking to girls and they're bringing up Eurovision and, you know, talking about how good their own song is and stuff like that. I mean, girls love it. And it is a demonstration in female voting patterns. So in the public vote, I think Ukraine got 10 or 12 points from literally every single nation. And, you know, that's because, you know, these girls are just programmed by the media to think that they need your sympathy and that Eurovision actually means something. And all it is an exhibition in liberal progressivism and anti-Russian hatred. I mean, Ukraine won in 2016 with an anti-Stalinist song, making Russia out to be the bad guy. When the trans woman with the beard won, it was, you know, framed as Putin being anti-gay and anti-tranny and all this stuff. It's just a complete joke, but I bet on it every year. And when Russia invaded Ukraine...
Bet on it every year?
Yeah, you know my job. I'm a professional gambler and there's good opportunities.
You're professional? Yeah, look, mate, I used to have a modicum of respect for you, but that is rapidly diminishing. So you're telling me you bet on Eurovision and then sit watching it, rubbing your hands, waiting for your favourite to come up?
No, I was playing darts last night.
Oh, that's okay.
But
respect restored.
No, but Ukraine, it was a terrible song. It was very, on the day of invasion, when Russia invaded, Ukraine was something like 20-1. And, you know, before a song had even been sung in the final, they were 4-11 or something, 70% chance of winning. So, you know, completely political, completely controlled by the media. You know, just forget about it and get on with your lives.
Did you make good winnings?
Yeah, I did all right. Yeah.
Good, good. That's good. So basically, Nativist has fired numerous shots. He's obviously pays far more interest to Euro Cuck Vision than anyone else. But he did say this is all the fault of women. So I do believe we have a woman on the panel tonight. And typically, as a woman, she's failing to get her technology to work correctly. So proving that she is a genuine woman. So, Laura, would you like to give your opinion on Eurovision?
Oh, we all knew that Ukraine were going to win, didn't we? Do you remember when Israel joined and they won? Why Israel in the Eurovision Song Contest?
No idea.
God, yeah, well, Australia had some tranny last night as well.
Oh, well, I suppose at
Australia.
Least that's a European family.
Did you say Australia
country.
Or Austria?
Australia in Eurovision, yeah. And they had a tranny. And he was like Asian. He was an Asian race tranny.
I'm hating it even more.
It is political because do you remember when we voted Brexit and then everyone gave us 0 points? We always get grief in Eurovision, the haters.
So, Laura, over the weekend, I'm giving you some good advice now. Don't watch Eurovision. Had any other good advice? Feed your baby raw milk? Any other drama?
Oh, God. I can't believe that. Well, we don't want to start beef, do we? But
we don't want to start a beef, but...
What bad advice? Do not give your baby cows milk when they are a baby. It's fine when they're a bit older, but when they're a baby... their digestive system isn't mature and they just can't handle it. Yeah. I hope no one listens to that, you know, what he said. What do you think, Mark?
All I can say is the following. Lol. The idea that you should give a child cow's milk as a newborn is insane. But the idea you should give a cow unfiltered, unpasteurized, raw cow's milk as a newborn is not just insane, but it will legitimately kill your baby. I can't believe that this is something that's having to be said. I can't believe that this is an issue that has come up over the weekend. But if you think the Eurovision has been the craziest thing of the weekend, well, you'd be wrong. Over on Telegram, it has been drama central between Keith Woods and Thomas Sewell. Keith Woods claiming that women should either breastfeed or use a formula of their choice, obviously after looking into which formula to use, or you could go with Thomas Sewell's sort of take, I won't say knowledge, take on the issue, which is to totally ignore the breastfeeding or the formula and go straight in with the cow's milk, preferably raw. So there's been telegram drama. And I've got to say, people are saying, are the women actually advocating for this? Because it will kill the baby. No, it wasn't a woman that advocated for this. Laura,
it was just where he said something like, I don't have kids and I've not looked into it. It's just intuition. And it's like, that is so dangerous because babies, I mean, really, when babies come out, they're not really ready for the world. They can only see about 30 centimetres in front of them. They can only see black and white. They can't hear entirely, you know, properly. The digestive systems aren't formed yet. They need breast milk preferably, but if there's some sort of reason why you can't give them that, you can't just switch to cow's milk because it doesn't have all the nutrients that they need and their little bodies can't handle it, and it can even cause things like bleeding in the intestines and stuff. So I just thought that was incredibly dangerous for him to say that, but I don't think any mums will be taking the advice, hopefully.
No. So, Harrison, did you want to add anything about Eurovision? Are you a massive Eurovision fan? Do you have a picture of Gina G on your bedroom wall?
No, I had to take that down since I got with Mrs. St. Harrison.
Oh, wow. Mrs. St. Harrison's not bad looking, but the thing is, St. Harrison, if you were to have the choice between Mrs. St. Harrison as she is or expelling Mrs. St. Harrison from the St. Harrison household and then taking on Gina G as Mrs. St. Harrison, what would you do?
Obviously, I'd keep Mrs. St. Harrison. I don't want that Australian harridan. No, we used to watch Eurovision as a family when we were younger and score them. I think the idea in principle is good if they stuck with traditional music from each European country, but instead you get this gay pop year in, year out. And we were listening or earwigging a conversation in the All You Can Eat Chinese earlier between this fucking tick box group of friends, and they were saying that essentially the UK won because it was obvious that Ukraine won, we're gonna win. So that's discounted. So that makes us first.
Well, did we come second?
Yeah.
What did we sing about to come second? Because the rest of Europe
man. It was like a really high-pitched. It's like a really high-pitched song about space. But he was the best singer, but it was a very gay song. I didn't like it.
You know, you guys know far too much about Eurovision for my liking. Laura, can I instigate a purge? Do you think we need a purge?
If we can do a foreign language film.
Oh, shut up. You re-mute yourself. I was bringing you in for a good joke, and now you've made me upset. Right, carry on, St. Harrison. I want to know more about this all-you-can-eat Chinese, because I wish I'd been there.
Oh, it's $14.99. Good selection. Oh. Ate too much, so we couldn't get onto the dessert. But yeah, there was a group of friends sat behind us, so we were listening to what they were saying. But then they made the point, how is a war-torn country going to host it next year? But at that point, we didn't hear what the answer was because it was time to leave.
Wow. That's quite interesting. It's quite interesting about, you know, all these incredible takes. That is interesting. I mean, sometimes when I do listen to normies, I'm quite comforted sometimes. You listen to sort of a normie conversation and you can sometimes hear something. You think, yeah, they're not too far from us. And then sometimes you listen to normies and you're sort of pulling your hair out. I will say this, though. I tend to get more frustrated with older people than anything else, especially when I'm sort of in the barbers getting my hair cut. If you get an old guy in there, the old guy will say, have like a really hot take, like, aren't you going to put your masks on, lads? We're all in it together. And you're like, that's kind of what you get from them. But from younger people, you do get some decent takes every now and again.
When you do your stupid voice to me on the phone, you don't do a Yorkshire accent, you do a Brummie accent.
Why do you think I do that Brummie accent? Who knows? Who knows?
But on a stream, you still do the Yorkshire accent.
Do I? I've got to stop doing that, haven't I?
Yeah.
I do, yeah.
It's relentless. I always laugh.
I think I do it on the phone to you because, like, there's not an audience. But when I'm on, like, a stream with you, I do kind of want to annoy you for the amusement of said audience. So I do think that I somewhat do it just to raise your ire a little bit. So you're sort of like...
But you're both in the same area.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
But you're from the Midlands, aren't you?
Well, look, just put it like this. I don't have a bumpkin accent. So, yeah, let's just, it doesn't matter where I'm from. I just don't have one of those comedic accents, do I? So I can get away with it. And I do like winding you up, Laura.
Can't all be from the prosperous south.
I'm not from the south, God. I'm just trying to wind her up. Just trying to wind up on a day when she has been roasted online for not feeding her baby raw milk and probably raw meat as well. I mean, that'll be the next thing, won't it? Blend up some fillet steak, Laura, and force it into your child's mouth.
Steak tartare for your 3-month-old.
Oh, God. Well, Catherine's 4.5 months now, so she's just starting to taste other food a little bit. And when she's about 6 months, we'll start weaning her. And even if you just put a bit of cucumber on her tongue for her to taste, she's like, like sticks her tongue out like it's the most sour thing ever. And it's just a bit of cucumber. So it
cucumber
must be...
is disgusting, Laura. I don't blame her.
or anything. She's like, it's really sour. So yeah, it must be. They just can't handle it at this age.
No, that is true. That is true. So we've got a couple of other super chats. Calibri said, well, not paid ones though. Calibri says, no ideas for a category, but Kerry Boo tried to suggest Mishima, A Life in 4 Chapters for me last time. So I'm getting in and suggesting it this month. Well, I'm not taking that with any degree of seriousness. If Kerry Boo can't get the super chats working, sorry, Kerry Boo, don't pass it through a third party. And Rouse Yourself from Slumber said, a good idea for a film category next month, a zombie film. I'll recommend Shaun of the Dead. Well, I've already decided on what film it's going to be next month. So, but we may do a zombie film after that. What do you guys think about doing a zombie film 1 month?
Oh, well, definitely.
That Mishima film looks class.
Does it? So Kerry Boo's actually made a good suggestion.
See, when you insult her, I have to listen to it afterwards.
I know you do, mate. I know. And do you know what she's going to say? She's going to say, for God's sake, St. Harrison, can't you just defend my honour a little bit when he's gobbing off? Whereas I'll be just at home, still smiling to myself about exactly. The trouble I've caused.
Do you still need to watch the DVD she sent you?
Yeah, I do. I do appreciate gifts, but if they're gifts that I have to
read
or yeah, do any form of reading or you know even sort of pay yeah any attention, then unlucky basically. Sorry about that, Kerry.
Ian Moo in the chat said Lana from Red Ice is pushing raw milk. You need to talk to Lana. I'm not saying that adults or even children shouldn't drink raw milk. I'm saying don't give it to newborn babies instead of breast milk because newborn babies can't handle it yet. But Lana knows more about nutrition than I do, but I don't think even she'd suggest to give it to a baby.
Right. It's not without its risks. Children can get poisoned by raw milk as well.
Look,
yeah, that too.
Let me explain in simple biological terms why giving raw milk to a newborn is very, very bad. And I'll do this very simply. If you give formula to a child, that formula is produced to contain the specific nutrients that human babies get from their mother. However, that formula will not be as good as breast milk because other things are passed to the baby through breast milk, such as antibodies, a certain degree of immunity. If a child is sickly, the mother actually produces what is necessary in the breast milk to actually help the baby. Breast milk is actually miraculous stuff. It really is amazing. And it truly is the best thing for children. It's the best thing for your child. If you want to do the best by your child, you want them to have breast milk. That is 100% factual. There's no ifs, no buts. That is the fact. Formula, however, is a second best. But you should not give them cow's milk. Now, why shouldn't you give them cow's milk? Well, cow's milk, strangely enough, I think the clue's in the name, though, is formulated within cows to for calves and doesn't contain the nutrients that human babies need. Now, raw cow's milk actually contains cultures of bacteria that can make you sick. Now, when you're a fully grown human and your gut is at its full length and you have immunity to a lot of stuff, those bacteria can actually then be good for you and help your digestive system. However, when you're a baby, especially a newborn baby, or when you're young, should I say, or especially when you're a newborn baby at your youngest, you have virtually no immunity. Your gut is extremely short because you're not fully developed. So if those bacteria get into your system at that age, they have a high likelihood of at best making you extremely ill or at worst killing you. So if you want to ensure that your baby survives, please give your baby the best thing, which is breast milk. However, I understand not every baby can be breastfed. There are some women who can't breastfeed for certain reasons. That is a fact. There are some people who, are on certain medications, so they can't breastfeed. There are some women that they just don't take to it for whatever reason. But if your child doesn't take to breast milk or you can't breastfeed, there are a range of different formulas, and you want a formula that is not one of the vegan or vegetarian formulas. You want one of the formulas that is made that contains essential oils, which when not taken from breast milk are actually essentially fish oils. Now, those are processed in such a way as not to harm the baby. Look for those kind of formulas, not the vegetarian or vegan ones. They'll be very, very bad for your child. Just cranky nonsense. Get them the best type of formula. Breast is best, but a fish oil based formula or formula containing fish oil is second best. If you give your baby cow's milk, it does not have the nutrients in it that your baby needs. If you give the baby raw cow's milk, you are likely to kill it. Those are the facts. Anyone saying otherwise is promoting something that will essentially kill white babies if you follow that poor advice. Any further biological questions, people, just before we go to our roundup? Going once, going twice, no further biological questions. Anyone got any questions on how to protect their toes when walking around the house?
Look where you're going.
Good points, St. Harrison. Nativist, any tips on protecting toes?
I love my slippers.
We've all stubbed our toe at one point in our life. Have you never done it, Mark?
We've never broken it.
I have actually broken my toe myself in similar circumstances. So I can't mock you. Yeah, I didn't have one of those funny things on. I just had to rest it for a small time. I had a hairline tiny fracture on the side of my big toe because I caught it on something once. So oh. I am in your sort of league of foolishness, but I wanted just to. I thought I wouldn't tell you all that I was in that same sort of league of foolishness until we got to the end of the show, thus avoiding my fair share of the ribbing.
I've never broken anything, but then I'm hard.
Have you ever broken any hearts, St. Harrison?
Obviously.
I like that answer. Right. So now we've got through that. We have 100 Odyssey tokens from Stan One, and he said, "Hail General Woundwort," and we have at BB Idiocracy for the next film review. No, the next film review is going to be The Northman. Everyone's talking about it. Everyone is talking about it. We're reviewing The Northman next month. It's going to be a popular one, and people will want to see that. So it's going to be The Northman, and I hope everyone's going to like that. But let's do the roundup of tonight's film. St. Harrison, give your final thoughts and a score out of 10, if you would, my good friend.
Well, it's been a good fun stream. We've gone off on many tangents. It's nice to hear other films being talked about as well. But no, it's a great film. Show it to your kids no matter what age they are. And if you haven't seen it yourself, go and watch it. It's on YouTube, so you ain't got to pay for it. But in the words of one of the rabbits, be cunning, be full of tricks, and your people will never be destroyed. I will give it a 9.
You know, that's one of the best summations we've ever had on the show. I really like that. You know what, St. Harrison? You're a good egg. I like having you on this show.
Oh, I know.
That was a good summation. Do you know what? He really does his homework. And yeah, I did share the free version of this. So if you didn't watch it or you didn't see that I shared it, I did share it. So if you want to watch it, it's definitely worth watching. Over to you, Nativist. Score, please, and final summation.
Yeah, first time watching. And, you know, it's from the 70s. I was very impressed. Beautifully, beautiful art, beautiful score. And, yeah, quite an original piece. Spoke a lot about the moral themes. I certainly wouldn't be against raising my children with sort of the Judeo-Christian tradition and ideas such as democracy, even though I don't agree with those ideas so much as an adult. But yeah, I think it's a great kids film. Just don't start them off too young where it might give them nightmares. So I'd say probably wait till about 7 or 8 or something. But yeah, overall, I'd give it an 8 out of 10. And yeah, would recommend to all parents.
And what you can read into that is that Nativist was wetting the bed at the age of 6 after watching Watership Down. Thank you for that stunning admission, Nativist. It was very good of you. Laura, can we have a score out of 10, please? And your final thoughts, do not give it a half mark.
Yes. I'll keep it very quick because a little baby has just come into my office wanting some milk. I'm not going to give her cow's milk.
Moisturised.
Little grumpy baby wants feeding. But yeah, it's a very good film, and it's one that I don't think you need to have watched it when you were a kid to enjoy it now. I think it's that good. It's very beautiful and delicately drawn, and the voice acting is also very delicate and just beautiful, really. It is a little bit scary, so maybe wait until your kids are like 7 or 8. You can have discretion as a parent anyway. But yeah, I do recommend it, and I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. That's it.
I'm just going to say this for disclosure. I watched the first RoboCop film when I was 8. And, you know, you've just got to get stuck in. You've just got to get stuck in. I think this is an amazing film. I think it's beautiful. I think it's a real work of art. The animation, the music, the imagery, and the beautiful story, which is so whole, it's so complete, and it contains so many themes of the very English or British view of nationalism, of saving your people, of not relying on the state that might prey on you, of valuing freedom above safety, about wanting a future where your children can run free, about only letting go, about only giving up on life when you know that you have fulfilled your duty, which is, of course, to create a safe and true future for your children. I think this is wonderful, and I got to disagree with the rest. I do think this is a film you should show your children. Probably, you know, I'm against children having TV time at a young age, but once your children are old enough to sit in front of the TV and say sort of 4-ish for a full-length film, I think this is worth watching. And I know that some children might come away from this a little bit scared. I know that there's some children who might find this a little bit disturbing at times, but I think it's the right kind of fear. This wasn't made to terrify children. This wasn't made as sort of a gory horror flick, which is there to appall or terrify or, you know, with perverse themes. This film was made as what I feel is quite an accurate representation of the natural order of things, of country life. And I think something that children lack today is that connection with nature and the real world. And I think this could really, really help with that. So I will give it a 9 out of 10. It's one of my favorite animated films. I know I didn't suggest this film. I know it's St. Harrison's pick, but I was really, really happy when this was actually picked, because it brings back a real lot of childhood memories for me, and happy ones as well. So, yeah, a real hearty recommendation from everyone on the panel. And next month we will be reviewing The Northman. So I really hope you like that, because it's been reviewed by a few nationalists. And some people are saying it's brilliant. Some people saying, oh, it's got some anti-white themes. So I'm really hoping it's a film that we can get into. And it's a bit, it's obviously something that's being discussed quite a bit at the moment. People like the Joker review, so I'm hoping they'll like that. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. We're finishing a few minutes early this week because we don't have the big sort of chat and debate on what's going to be the next film, because I've already picked that. So we'll go around the group. If everyone would like to say their goodnights, St. Harrison, my good friend, you start us off.
Thanks for having us. It's been a good chat, and I hope everyone has a lovely month.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'll reiterate that I was hugely impressed with PA's leafleting effort in April. So well done to each and every person that took part in that. And as I've said before, talking on the internet's one thing, but getting out there and doing stuff is a completely different one. So well done to all. Have a good week.
Thanks for having me, and thanks to everyone who watched. And I'll be back tomorrow at 7 o'clock with Sam for Tea Time with Sam and Laura. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, everyone, and I'll see you all again soon.
Tea and coffee.
And Sam says we've got some tea and coffee if anyone wants to buy some.
Got to shill the product, guys. Got to shill the product. Yeah.
GrammarTowlers.co.uk.
Definitely. Look, it is the best tea and coffee you can buy. I always say that. It's great. And look, part of building the community is supporting our people. It's supporting endeavours like nationalist businesses. So if you do drink a lot of tea and coffee, you know, please do consider giving these guys your support. And finally, I will say my good night. It's been a really good show tonight. I've really, really enjoyed it. I've really liked the topics. We have chosen the film for the next month. I'll be back on Wednesday with Warren Baylog for Patriotic Weekly Review. I will also be back later next week for my regular appearances with Dr. David Duke. And next Sunday will be the Nationalist A-Team, which we skipped because of all of the crazy activities that have been going on this month. So I hope you all had a great weekend. I hope you've enjoyed Film Club. We'll be back next month with The Northman. Until then, we will see you soon. Stay strong, keep fighting. Thank you all, and good night.